Jesus said, "My heart is moved with pity for the crowds." This is one of the passages where Jesus reveals his heart. He reveals his heart in numerous places throughout the Gospels, and it's important for us to recognize he's talking about not the physical organ in his chest, but the seat of his affections, the place where decisions are made, where our hearts are moved. We find that we speak of the heart of the matter, or "you are my heart," or "take it to heart." We're talking about something very deep within us that actually motivates and directs our lives. The heart is a very powerful thing. He speaks in another place, "take my yoke upon me and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you shall find rest for yourselves." Again, he's talking about this, and eventually he allowed the soldier to open his side with a lance, and from his heart poured out blood and water. Again, he reveals his heart to us, the seat of his affections for us. In other words, salvation isn't just this giant program, you know, like a government program, and you and I are lucky enough to tap into it and get all the benefits. It's actually personal. His love for us is personal and it's intimate. Again, we find that Jesus is with us in a special way. He is the God-man. He's the incarnate Son of God, and therefore, his heart is the heart of God. That means that he can not only be offended by sins, he can be hurt. It's a different level, isn't it? To be offended is one thing. To be hurt is another. Our faithfulness is not only just, but it's love. Our sins are not only against him, but they're a rejection of him. And that brings a kind of a hurt. In other words, it's not just a giant salvation program. It includes that. But he did it for us personally. You heard in the second reading today, Christ died for us while we were yet sinners. He did it not for the just, but for the unjust. He died personally for us. And that means salvation is personal. It means that our prayers have to be much more personal than simply programmatic and saying the right things at the right time. It's to be taken to heart. Now, devotion to the Sacred Heart, as we know it, began in the year 1672. There Jesus revealed himself to St. Margaret Mary Alacoque, a visitation nun in France, and he asked to be honored in the symbol of his heart. He asked for acts of reparation, for frequent communion, for communion on the first Fridays, for the keeping of a holy hour. He wants our devotion to be personal and to be Eucharistic. And again, the Church approved this, not only on the basis of this revelation of St. Margaret Mary, but because it makes sense in itself. Now again, there's only one person in Jesus. That person is the same God-man. It's the second person of the Trinity. There's only one person. He's both God and man. And his heart is divine. And his heart is of God. So in honoring the heart of Christ, our homage lingers on the person of Jesus and the fullness of his love. Again, Jesus loved us. It was that caused him to be born, to be conceived of the Virgin and born with us. He could have come down a full-fledged man and simply parachuted in. And he chose to come in humility, dependence. He was born of the Virgin. And he loves his mother, just like you and I love our mothers. He came in the most ordinary of ways. He humbled himself. And again, his teaching was an act of love. His praying and his work was an act of love. Giving himself in the Blessed Sacrament was an act of love. His dying and his rising, again, were acts of love. He poured himself out for us, and he says, "The world must know that I love the Father and do just as he has commanded me." Again, the love is what predominates in everything that he does. And again, because he's this God-man, everything that he does is the act of both God and man at the same time. And therefore, not only is he loved personally, he can be hurt personally. He feels our rejection. So watch out for that. It's much more personal than you and I think. Now, when he reveals himself to St. Margaret Mary, in the first revelation, he comes to her, and the revelation was intimate. She said, "He made me rest for a long time on his breast." And so he revealed the wonders of his love, and again, a flowing out from his heart. The second revelation comes later. He was glorious, royal, radiant, in splendor and majesty. And yet now he came as the outraged spouse and the unacknowledged king. Jesus goes on to say, "This is much more painful to me than all I suffered in my passion. If men rendered me some return of love, I should esteem little all that I've done for them, and should wish, if it could be so, to suffer it all over again. but they meet my eager love with coldness and rebuffs. Do you at least console and rejoice me by supplying as much as you can for their ingratitude. Again, this devotion is an expiation for the crimes of the world and a consolation for his heart. He loves us with a heart. And again, this makes all of our prayers much more personal. Yes, there's a program of it. Yes, he died for the whole world, for the salvation of the world. Should we open ourselves to that? In one sense, you could say there is a giant program of divine salvation. But it also takes place, and it really only takes place, in a personal way. And sometimes we're not personal enough with our prayers. St. Margaret tried to excuse herself from Jesus as unable to meet his needs, and he told her, "Fear not. Behold, I bestow upon you all that is needed to love me." And at that moment, the divine heart opened, and there shot forth a flame so ardent, I thought I should be consumed by it. And there was an admirable symbol of the rewarming of the hearts brought about by this devotion. She says, "The fire that devoured me brought on continual fever, but I rejoiced too much in suffering to complain of it." Again, this is one of the paradoxes. The saints are somehow sharing in the sufferings of Christ and rejoicing at the same time. Mysteriously, he unites things together that you and I think are absolute opposites, and he brings them together in love. The third and final revelation of the Sacred Heart, Jesus says, "Behold this heart that has so loved men that it has spared nothing, even to exhausting and consuming itself, in order to testify to its love. In return, I receive from the greater part only ingratitude, by irreverence, sacrilege, by coldness, the contempt they have for me and the sacrament of my love. And what is most painful to me, this is sometimes done by even consecrated souls. It is for this reason that I ask of thee the first Friday after the Feast of Corpus Christi to be appropriated as a special feast to honor my heart." Now again, that was just Friday. That was the Feast of the Sacred Heart. Again, it was right after this time of Corpus Christi. And again, we find here the bishops chose this moment to consecrate the United States of America to the Sacred Heart. And we'll be joining in that after Holy Communion Day. We'll be offering a similar prayer, their bishop's own prayer, consecrating ourselves to Jesus Christ under the title of the Sacred Heart. Again, he wants us to not only honor him on that day, but to receive communion, make reparation for the indignity that his heart has received. And I promise that my heart will dilate and pour out abundantly the influences of its love and all who render it this honor and lead others to do so. Now, this great devotion to the Sacred Heart makes our love and our prayers personal. And it's got to be that close. We consecrate ourselves to the Sacred Heart, acknowledging him as Creator and Redeemer, having full rights over us as King of Kings, by repenting and resolving to serve him. Now, we have to pray. Sadly, I think a lot of people don't pray. They go to Mass, and that's a prayer, it's a good, but they never ask of anything. And if you don't ask, you won't receive. There are benefits he'd like to give that he holds back until you ask. He says, "Ask and you shall receive. Seek and you will find." He wants to give things, but he's drawing us into relationship, personal, not just externals, but from our hearts to his heart. "Ask and you shall receive." And that has to begin that way. But it goes much deeper. Do you know shared sufferings also build friendship with Jesus? Just the other day, I was watching an episode of The Band of Brothers. Wonderful, powerful, powerful TV series about World War II and this group of paratroopers. And part of the group had been through the Battle of Bastogne, and they had suffered the long, hard winter there in Bastogne. And then one guy tries to join up with them after it's all over, and he hasn't been through it. He kind of ducked out, had a little kind of a smaller injury, and he kind of played it up, and he didn't come back for 3 months. And he comes back to them, and they're different. They're bonded together. They shared sufferings together. They became the band of brothers by shared sufferings. And this guy, who hadn't been part of it, didn't fit in anymore. He wasn't part of it, didn't share it. It wasn't enough to have a uniform. Shared sufferings can do that. When husband and wife work through hardships, difficulties, poverty, holding the things together, building the family strong, working through hardships, they become bonded together. There's a bond that comes this kind of suffering. And sometimes, maybe often in fact, this is the shared suffering we need to bring to Jesus. And we go to him with our sufferings, whatever they might be. And they could be painful things, unemployment. They could be rejections by those that we might love. All of these things we bring to Jesus and we pour it out. We lay it all out, every bit of it. And we look for ways that he suffered the very same things that we are suffering. And it begins to be a bond. And you'll find that Jesus, in the gospel passages, will often speak a word to you that's straight from his heart to your heart. And all of a sudden, you've got a connection. You've got a bond. He's one with you. He understands you. He suffered the same thing as you. And now you've got a friendship born of something more than offering up a couple little prayers. There's shared sufferings. There's shared love. It becomes personal. And that's what our prayers are supposed to be like. We're straight from his heart. It could be an amazing bond that's established. So Jesus wants to help us in so many things, but he wants to unite himself to us and us to himself so quickly. So open your hearts to him. He says, take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am meek and humble of heart, and you will find rest for your souls.